This is 1A. I'm Celeste Headlee, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. The country is divided and polarized. People aren't talking to each other. They often hate people who live in different places and vote for different politicians. Maybe what America needs is a 6'4" black, left-leaning, asthmatic dad and stand-up comedian. W. Kamau Bell wants to make you laugh, but he wants to do it while telling you the truth. He's the host of CNN's Emmy Award-winning documentary series, United Shades of America. He's also the author of The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell, and out with a new Netflix stand-up special, Private School Negro. He joins us to discuss his special and a lot more just ahead.
Support for 1A and the following message come from American Express. These days, keeping up with everything in the news is hard, whether it's politics or pop culture. American Express believes it's always easier to stay ahead when there's someone behind you. Easier to focus on what matters, to follow what interests you, to explore, to discover. And with American Express, you don't have to go it alone because they have your back. Don't live life without it.
I'm Scott Detrow. There is so much political news to follow these days, but you don't have to keep up with all of it. You just have to keep up with us on the NPR Politics podcast. You can find us on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kamau, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start by just explaining the title of your special? What does it mean when you say private school Negro?
It means I'm a Negro who went to a private school.
And the implications of that are?
Well, I felt like most of my life I was defined by the fact that I wasn't doing blackness the way that either mainstream American culture said blackness was supposed to be performed, or the way that sometimes many other black people thought blackness was supposed to be performed. So at this point in my life, at my current age of 45 with now three children, I'm just sort of embracing, I'm just one of those private school Negroes. So that helps for me. It helps frame my identity for somebody who's like, do I want to watch this special? Well, do you want to hear from a private school Negro? No, I don't. Okay, keep it moving then.
It's kind of like a warning. You're doing a public service so they know what
they're getting. I believe in the power of titles, as you've read the title of my book, and I think titles should should do what it says on the tin, as they say in the UK. So for me, it's like this is exactly what it is. If that does not sound interesting to you, then I'm totally fine with that.
And I mean, there's another moment. You start the special almost immediately with this. Let's play this little clip.
The most frustrating thing for me about the Trump era, or error, depending upon your pronunciation. Is that I will still find myself in discussions with people who will still say they don't think he's a racist. White people. Yeah. She's like, oh, yeah, okay. She's like, people? White people. Oh, yeah. For a second. And it's not just white people on the right. It's white people across the political spectrum that if you go, I think Donald Trump's a racist, and they go, I mean... He's a bad guy, but I don't know if you can call him a racist. I mean, I would make him the head of BET, but I don't know if you can call him a racist. I mean, I wouldn't let him do the commencement at Morehouse, but I don't know if you can call him. I don't know if you can call him a racist. I mean, it's just so many things.
I should mention that bit of all the things that jobs you wouldn't give him goes on for a really long time.
Maybe an annoyingly long time. But
it wasn't annoying to me, but it is, inventive how long you're able to go. But is this also basically you starting your special by saying, here's the people I want to talk to?
Yeah, I think it's just important to go. One of my favorite comedy specials of all time is Chris Rock's Bring the Pain. And I didn't start as hard as he started because I'm not the same comic he is. But from the first few moments of that special, it's like, oh, here we are. this is what we're here to do. And so I just believe, again, like, let's get into the middle of the conversation. Let's not do a whole lot of how you doing, where you from, happy to be here. Let's actually just get into the middle of it.
And yet your show, United Shades of America, you're talking to a lot of people that after they saw that would not watch your comedy special. How do you... Go ahead.
After they saw the thing you just played?
Or... Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, they would disagree with you immediately, right?
Yeah. But that's possible. First of all, I'm not a comedian who, I would not to break any news, I'm not Kevin Hart. So there is a sense that I'm trying to find my audience. I'm not trying to gain the biggest audience possible. And let me be clear, there's nothing wrong with the Kevin Hart approach to comedy. It clearly works. But I'm trying to find the people who want to be in my audience. And even in United Shades, I'm just going about it a different way in United Shades. And I do have a lot of people who watch United Shades who say, I don't agree with you politically, but I enjoy the show and I learn a lot. And so I think that same thing can happen in the stand-up. It's just the stand-up is a more pure version of who I am because it is just me and the words coming out of my mouth.
So how do you view your mission then? I mean, is there, like, let's say, you know, for doctors, obviously the main job of a doctor is to treat illness, right, or prevent illness. But they have their motto, do no harm. Is there a parallel motto for comedians?
I think every comedian has their own mission statement. I think we all give ourselves our degrees different than doctors who are given degrees by outside organizations. So the first mission of all comedians is you got to get laughs. If you're not getting laughs of any significant size or any regularity, then you're not going to be employed as a stand-up comedian. So I think that's the first thing is you have to get laughs. If you're not getting laughs, it's just a poorly organized speech. So other than that, then it becomes every comedian's job to figure out how they want to get laughs. And so this is how I want to get laughs.
Okay, so then I want to play another clip from your special. The special, again, is called Private School Negro. It's on Netflix. And you're talking about America, and you're talking about why we dislike each other.
And the truth is that when Trump won, I wasn't that surprised about it. I know a lot of caught a lot of people off guard, but I travel around this country a lot. I see a lot of different parts of this country. And I sort of can see that one of the problems with this country, or one of the challenges of this country, is that we all live in our communities, and some of us love our communities so much that we start to think that everybody else should live like we live in our communities, and if they're not living like that, they're doing America wrong. The great thing about traveling around a lot is I get to hear things and meet people and experience things that I never would have experienced that to me sound weird, and I don't even know where to classify them, but then I realize that's not really about me, it's fine. But it opens up my ideas of what this country is. You know what I mean? We have to expand our idea of what an American is so that we don't think other people are doing America wrong when they're just doing it differently than us, all right?
Why do you think we have trouble dealing with difference? I mean, in this country that's called the melting pot, where we have always sort of, in many ways, prided ourselves on diversity, why do we have trouble tolerating it?
First of all, I want to be clear, like, that's the longest I go in the special without a laugh. I won't, as I was listening to it, I was like, I don't want people to think, it's mostly just me opining about America. and really, that's a setup to a joke, so. But yes, I think that's a comedian me going, Chris Rock right now, is being like, what was that? I'll get a text from him, like, what was that joke? So, I think the problem is that we all get caught up in our corners of America. And if you love that corner, then you just go, I think this is the best way to be an American. And then if you travel and you see somebody else doing something, you sort of look at that as being like, ooh, that's how they do it, as opposed to, oh, that's how other Americans are doing it. Now, some of that stuff, if we're talking about violence or assault or any number of things that are actually breaking the law or hurting people, that's fine to judge. But we do that about, like, you eat this? Oh, they're not doing America right. And I think that's the part, that's the thing I'm getting to. Like, and because I've traveled a lot, and I go to my dad's in Alabama a lot, and I also live in the West Coast, and I've lived in Chicago and Boston and Indianapolis and Philadelphia. I've just seen a lot of different versions of America. So I sort of now go, oh, that's how they do it here. Okay, keep it moving.
Do you think it's harder for comedians today to avoid politics? I mean, we're at a point where what you eat and when the music you listen to and the movies you choose to go to all somehow get caught up in politics. So is it harder to avoid it?
I think it's harder to avoid it because we're all talking about what we eat and what music we listen to, and we're just sort of spitting it out into the universe. And then somebody on the other side of the universe goes, why would you listen to that in a way that we weren't doing before the internet? Like, everybody got to sort of enjoy their thing and live their life. And then we get defensive about the things we listen to and the food we eat. I mean, it's sort of, look at what's happening with the Star Wars movies right now. Everybody thought they understood the Star Wars movies the way they were intended to be understood. And now all these people are going to see the Star Wars movies and then talking about it online. And people have gotten completely opposite versions of what the Star Wars movies are about from each other. Like, they don't understand them in the same way at all. And I think that's just a great example of, like, yeah, we all get in our corners and we think our corner is the realest corner, and everybody else who is in a different corner is misunderstanding things.
One of the things that people find it very difficult to talk about, and many people won't talk about, about it is, of course, our president. And I already played one clip where you mentioned him. You also go on to talk about his time as a landlord when he was investigated for racial profiling. You talk about his request that the Central Park Five get the death penalty, his role in the birther movement. Do you have any suggestions for how to talk about the president with your fellow Americans?
I think my thing was, use evidence. I think that a lot of times people will just say, Donald Trump is the blah, blah, blah. And it's just a bunch of insults or descriptions that are actually not relevant to his politics about what his body looks like or what you think his mental health is. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to say that he's a racist. And here's all the evidence to prove that he's a racist. Now, the thing is, because it's a comedy special, I can sort of just keep talking about it without being interrupted. If you're doing that to somebody in real life, you have to leave room for them to have their version of the conversation. And you also have to make sure that the rules are established that you're having a conversation. And a lot of times online, people are pretending to have conversations, but they're not really having. They're just sort of like waiting to come up with a good tweet.
You mean they're not listening?
They're not engaging. It's not even about listening, because sometimes, and this will happen on United Shades sometimes, people are saying things that I'm like, I don't agree with any of that, but I'm going to let them get to the end of their statement so they don't feel like I'm interrupting them, just because I don't have to interrupt them in the middle of their thing to go, I don't agree with any of that. Sometimes you're like, okay, I see where this is going. Sounds like this person is homophobic. Well, I'm going to let them finish this homophobic thought, and then I will speak.
Michael emailed to us that the problem is not diversity. The problem is we don't agree on a common set of values.
I mean, that makes me think, what does he think a common set of values is? I mean, it's hard to have that. I had a friend who did high school debate, and I learned if you can't agree on terms, you can't really have a discussion. So I do think that if I would say, from traveling on United States of America, we do have common values of like, we want our kids to be educated, right. And we want good jobs.
Let's talk a little bit about your daughters.
Sweet.
Yeah, because you talk about them a lot, and I find it really kind of endearing how much you love the show Doc McStuffins, the animated kids show.
I have a long record of loving Doc McStuffins.
Yeah.
It's not just for the
comedy special. Very, very long. It's not just something that you mention in your new special, but, you know, I follow you on Twitter. You were really excited when the dad in Doc McStuffins got a name.
Because he hadn't had a name up until that point. He was just Dad McStuffins. And so his name's Marcus. And I was like, yay, because I sort of identify with the dad in Doc McStuffins. And, you know, and so for me, it was like exciting. I think I tweeted, he has a name.
Yeah, it's Marcus. Why do you identify with him?
I mean, I'm a dad. I'm a black dad. And there's not a ton of black dads for me to watch on cartoon programming that my kids are watching. I'm not saying there's not other black dads in cartoon programming, but there's not, you know, my daughter's other favorite show is Octonauts. That's all animals. Like, so and so to see a dad who's actually, in the show, he's a good dad. He's not like a foil for a good dad. He's a good dad. He cares about his kid. He's always giving her vegetables to eat. She eats them. He's got a garden. I mean, what's not to like about Marcus McStuffins?
So I find it interesting to sort of compare and contrast the way you talk about Doc McStuffins as opposed to the way you describe the TV that you consumed as a young man, because you didn't have the same sort of black role models that your daughters now have. And so I wonder how big of a change is that from the time that you were watching The Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man as a kid?
It's a huge change. And I mean, people say it's peak TV for grownups. It's peak TV for everybody. It's peak TV for children too. And I was always, I mean, my whole life, I've hated the way people sort of condescend to the idea of watching too much television, or I don't, you know, I live in the Bay Area, so people say, I don't watch TV, as if that makes them smarter. And you know, I only have Netflix. Oh, 'cause that's not TV. So for me, it's about choices. My mom, so as much as I watched like The Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man, I also watched a ton of PBS when I was a kid. And I also watched a ton of like political shows. We watched 60 Minutes in my house because that's what the TV was on the TV when it was Sunday nights. And so I watched a very wide variety of TV, and I know that it helped make me smarter and more interested in the world. And so for our daughters, it's the same thing. It's just they have a much wider array of things to choose from.
And, I mean, you read a lot of comic books. It wasn't just watching the superheroes on TV. There's a really long, great rant in your book about all the black superheroes that, for some reason, have black in their names.
Yes. No offense, Black Panther and Black Lightning, but that's just the way it was.
Right, right. Have a secret alias if you become Black Lightning, right? But
yeah, exactly. Nobody goes, here, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's White Superman.
Okay, so, but you say, even say comic books are important, that this isn't just pop culture. What makes it so important?
Look, I mean, they're more important now than they were when I was a kid. The ubiquitous nature of them, the fact that a lot of kids start to form a love of reading through comic books, the fact that it's about images that are sort of imprinting in your head. And if you don't see anybody in that space for you, not only can you not imagine yourself being it, you probably can't even imagine yourself writing it and creating them. You know what I mean? And not that there's certainly a history like Dwayne McDuffie of black people in comic books, but it's just the idea that, like, it's not encouraging you to be a part of the industry or even a part of the dream. And I think that representation is important. And I tell the joke in the special that you referenced. The joke is about how my daughter thought all doctors were black women because of Doc McStuffins being about a little black girl who's a doctor. And you just go, whoa, that's how important representation is.
Okay, so I want to play you another moment in the special when you're talking about your young daughters, and it sounds like you're trying to put a positive spin on an increasingly negative news cycle. Here's that bit.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is as bad as things are, as parents, we have to try to give our kids hope, right? And sometimes it's hard to give them hope. You know, one time Sammy walked in and goes, Dada, is there anything we like about Donald Trump? I mean, like anything? I was like, his haircuts are remarkably consistent. It's got to take a lot of product. He travels a lot. He must have a big kit of products.
How do you have hope when you clearly have a lot of anger and frustration? How do you transmit hope to your daughters?
I mean, I don't know about everybody's kids, but our kids are sort of naturally hopeful people. I think a lot of kids, they just think the world is there for them and that everything will work out. And so for me, looking at my kids' faces and the things they get excited about that I'm like, you know, you give my daughter an eraser and she's like, an eraser. Like, so it helps remind you that things aren't always as heavy as they seem. And a lot of it's about perspective. But then on the other side of that is also like then going with your kids like, okay, I have to let you know about some of the bad things. We have a president named Donald Trump. And so it's also about raising kids who are aware of the world, which me and my wife are really think that's important too. And also understanding that you can't control what your kids take in. So my daughter knew who Donald Trump was when he was running for president. And I was like, where'd you get that information from? And I still don't really know other than she's just in the world.
So I want to read a couple questions from listeners. Yahoo in the DMV tweeted us, as a black man in an interracial marriage, do you ever worry about your children dealing with identity?
Okay, so first of all, let me be clear about this. I would worry about my children dealing with identity if I wasn't in an interracial marriage. So I just wanted, that's not just something that comes with my wife's white and I'm black. What's their identity going to be? We live in the Bay Area where there is mixed race is a very common identity out here. So our daughters see people mixed, not just black and white, but one of my daughter's best friends is half Japanese, half Filipino. So it's like this is just the way we are in the Bay Area. And I also know that because we're surrounded by those people, me and my wife can answer questions that our daughters have about identity when they have them. But also, if we can't answer them, there's many people around us who have lived that life and can help answer their questions. So we're very active in talking to our kids and also putting things in our kids' faces, like books and media that are about mixed race identity, as also about other identities.
Okay, so here's a question. There's a couple questions here about your CNN show, United Shades of America. Jen in Toronto tweets, now that his episode, United Shades of America, has aired for when he came to visit Canada, I'm curious if he has any final thoughts. Are we much different than Americans?
I think there's a fundamental difference in how Canadians think about society. I think if there was no America, I could be way more critical of Canada because Canada has a lot of the same racism issues. They've treated natives poorly, and we talk about that in the episode. But I do, but because there is an America, like I think I go, you know, if you just look at that, like Canada at some point voted for who was the most important Canadian in Canada's history, and it was the guy who'd come up with health with national health care. So that tells you what Canada is sort of prioritizing as a nation. So I think there are fundamental differences. And, you know, it is a thing that we Americans romanticize, but a lot of that's actually like there's some good romance there.
Who would you have voted for United, if we held that vote for United States, who would you have put your vote in for?
Off the top of my head, Malcolm X just occurred to me. I think he would probably, he would definitely be amongst the people I would consider in that slot.
All right, so Luke in Broomfield, Colorado tweets this. Going back to an earlier episode, how does W. Kamau Bell view civility? And does he think the right has a place to cry foul in view of recent events? How should the left respond?
You know, a lot of smarter people than me have talked about this. Civility is often determined by the people who are in charge, what is civil and what isn't civil. So when people on the right cry civility and at the same time have never criticized Donald Trump for being an uncivil person just in general, like, you know, whether it's giving a speech where he's encouraging people to beat up reporters or he's encouraging people to beat up people who he doesn't agree with or he's talking about shooting people in New York City. So for me, it's like it's hard to have any sort of civility argument when that's the leader of your side. Civility is not a thing that is determined, gets to be determined by the people who are in the oppressed person position. It's always something that gets to be determined by the people who are in charge. And so there's no point in talking about it because we live in uncivil times.
So we hear from comedians, every so often we'll hear a comedian say some version of, gee, I miss the days when we could just joke about Britney Spears and Kim Kardashian, right? I wonder how you...
I'm trying to picture the comedians who are saying that, but yes, I'm sure they exist.
Yeah, so I wonder how you feel about that. Is it a bummer that there seems to be so much at stake at this point?
I mean, I think, let me be clear, I haven't been inside of a comedy club in quite a little bit because I've been busy and got kids and stuff. But there are comedians who are still joking about, I mean, probably not Britney Spears because that's just because she's not in the news right now. But there are comedians who are still telling jokes about just regular stuff and having a good time. I mean, one of my favorite comedians is Jim Gaffigan. I saw Jim Gaffigan a few months ago. He's not on stage talking about Donald Trump, you know. Yeah. Brian Regan is another comedian who's known for being a clean comic who just talks about life. There are plenty of comedians who are doing that. And I think those comedians' work is important, too, because some people do want a break from talking about this. I think the problem is some comedians feel pressure to talk about Trump, and they're actually not capable of writing good jokes about it. And then you get bad jokes. But I don't think if you don't want to talk about this stuff, don't talk about this stuff.
Okay, so one of the questions that we asked our listeners was, what does it mean to you when you hear the phrase real American? And I wanted to read you a couple of responses. John says, real American to me means descendants of the native cultures here 10,000 to 20,000 years ago. The rest of us are all immigrants somewhere on the family tree. And Hope in Pennsylvania tweets, is there a true American when we are a melting pot with maybe 90% of the people living here, immigrants, descendant of immigrants? I don't agree with those who say the patriotic are the true Americans. So through all of your travels around the country, do you have a different answer for that? And I wonder what your response is when you hear people using that phrase, real American.
I mean, when I first hear the phrase real American, I do think about things like people like the Confederate flag. it sort of weighs in my head in a way that I'm like, that I have to sort of wade through people who sort of say, I'm a real American. I hear a Southern accent. So that's how it lands in my ears. But I know from traveling around the country with United Shades and as a stand-up comedian that Americans do have a sense of, we were talking about common values. Everybody wants to make more money at their job. Everybody wants to be able to take care of their family. Nobody wants to go bankrupt because of health scares or health care. Those are the things to me that should define American, and that things that we should be able to all get on the same page with, and then be able to elect people who will help us have better jobs, more effective health care, cheaper health care, and better education for our kids. But we get caught up in all the other sort of sexy discussions or the things that are sort of ginning up bases instead of having real conversations.
More to come on W. Kamau Bell's Travels. We're back in just a minute. Stay close.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Delta Airlines, always striving to take the stress out of travel so you can focus on what comes next. Their Fly Delta app is with you every step of the way, giving you timely information and updates without the hassle. It's never been easier to start planning your next trip. Find, compare, and book flights on the go. And if you're checking bags, you'll have peace of mind when you land, thanks to real-time RFID bag tracking right in your Fly Delta app. The Fly Delta app, available in app stores.
Would you put on a sweater that once belonged to Hitler? Can Chinese zodiac signs predict who's going to be a great scientist? And what happens when you use a training method for dogs to teach doctors? Answers to all those questions on my podcast, Hidden Brain.
We're speaking with the host of CNN's United Shades of America, stand-up comedian W. Kamau Bell. He's out with a new special on Netflix called Private School Negro. So let's continue. You know, Kamau, I really loved your old show that aired on FX, Totally Biased, with W. Kamau Bell. And the New York Times published a piece just last week that said your old show was before its time. That the, all you were talking about some topics too soon, no one else had caught up to you. What do you think of that theory?
I don't know. That article was sort of weird to me. I do know that I think the things we're talking about, we should have been talking about, and I wish I'd been on 5 years earlier. I think the ultimate failing of that show wasn't that we were 5 years too early, is that I was probably 5 years too green. I think I was not ready to have my own show, and I didn't catch up fast enough. And so I think that's what the failure of the show is. I think those topics always have needed to be talked about. And the proof is that so many comedians and writers and producers who left that show went on to work. And like Hari Kondabolu did the Problem with Apu documentary, has a Netflix special out. Aparna Nancherla has a Netflix special out. Guy Branum has a TV show. Kevin Avery, who's one of the writers on the show and a good friend of mine, wrote on Last Week Tonight and won 2 Emmys. So I feel like we had the talent. It's just that I was not ready to make that show pop.
So what did you do wrong?
I hadn't worked in television. I had been not a very good comedian. So by the time I got an opportunity to be on TV regularly, I didn't have enough reps. I mean, you look at somebody like John Oliver and Samantha Bee, or those two people, you know, they kind of went to John Stewart University before they got their shows. I wish I'd at least gone to John Stewart Community College before I got my show, because I just hadn't been on camera enough and didn't know how to be on camera. Didn't know how to read a teleprompter. Reading a teleprompter is one of the hardest things to do, and I didn't know how to do that. And so I think it shows. I think it's very clear. So I don't think we were 5 years too soon. I think I was just not ready. But I think that people who didn't like the show, I often think were not liking my performance and then just put it on the show, which I understand.
So then let's go back to your current show. You're the host of United Shades of America. You travel all around the U.S. You interact with all different types of Americans and, as we heard earlier, even Canadians. You tell a story in the special about how you got on this little tiny commercial plane going to Kansas, where they asked you to tell them what your weight was so they could balance the plane. And it obviously made you nervous. So here's a little bit about what you said about how you felt getting on that plane.
When I get on the plane, singing to myself, long, long time ago, I can still remember how that comic used to make me smile. But February made me shiver with every punchline he delivered. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed white bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the NAACP Image Award nominated comedian died. And we were singing.
Did you expect the audience to start singing at that point?
Yeah, if they hadn't, I'd have been pretty lonely. No, I'd been doing that bit for, you know, months on stage at that point, and it sort of naturally evolved, where first I just sang the first line of the song, and then I kept sort of adding words to it. And then at some point, I think people started singing along because they wanted to sing the song. And so then I was like, all right, let's. So every night I would lead a sing-along of the song, and it became this real great, fun moment in the show. And for me, it was so like, this is not what I would normally do. This is so alt comedy for me. And for me, again, pushing myself felt really good. Like, this is I'm stepping outside of myself to create this moment that sort of naturally emerged. So yeah, that's exactly what was supposed to happen there.
The first time that happened, was that a surprise? Did that feel, because you're seeing your show, that was the first time I'd seen that happen. It felt like surreal. Like, wow, the audience is going to sing that song.
I mean, I like that fact. It's a very surreal moment, and I love the fact that it was going to happen. It's like about 3/4 into the show, you kind of think, okay, this is what the show is. And then suddenly I'm very earnestly singing American Pie. Like, And I'm not a great singer, but you can feel that I'm really trying to hit the notes.
Oh, yeah, you're sincere.
And
yeah.
There's this moment of like, does he want me to like this? Am I supposed? I like the fact that it puts people back on their feet and even people in the audience. And then suddenly, and then for me, people don't realize this as a comic. The show is what the audience is seeing, but it's also what you're seeing as a comic. And I can see people in the audience sort of singing like, we're doing this? And then like, okay, I guess we're doing this. Bye, bye, Miss America. Like they're sort of singing confused about what's happening.
Yeah, I feel like they would have kept doing the whole song.
Yeah, they would have. I mean, it's sort of natural. And I write a lot on stage, so it's a moment that was created from months of doing that bit, and it just sort of turned into that. It wasn't something I didn't one day go, I'm going to figure out a sing along. It just happened, and then we had to go to Don McLean and get the rights for the song, which was hilarious.
Natasha writes on Facebook, "I like Bell's comedy, insightful, honest, and allows a different perspective. The latter is why the world is so divisive. If we respect others who are not harming us, we would have a more respectful society." And Natasha's comment about diversity takes us back to your show, United Shades of America. And there's an episode where you focus on the Sikh American community or Sikh American community. A member from a Sikh coalition tweeted at you and the show, and they asked you to cover of him. Here's a piece of what he wanted people to know.
You know, we have the turban, a sword. These symbolize sovereignty, because if you are not subject to someone else, if you're sovereign, mm-hmm. then only can you listen to your conscience. Mm-hmm. And then the most important of them is we're not allowed to cut our hair, a symbol of something that was given to us by God.
Yes, yeah. So do women have similar articles of faith?
Yes, women wear the exact same articles of faith. And unfortunately, for many Americans, there is only one way of thinking about what an American looks like. And especially when you've got a beard and a turban, mm-hmm. you don't fit that stereotype of an American, mm-hmm. right? These are the kind of things we're trying to dismantle through education and things like that.
What did you learn that was surprising to you in that episode?
That the Sikh faith, first of all, it's pronounced Sikh, not Sikh, and a lot of us say Sikh, and even some of them say Sikh, but they're trying to get us to all pronounce the word more correctly. The thing that I learned is that it's sort of embedded into the Sikh religion is inclusion and equality. Like the God, the idea of God has no gender, and that there's nothing about gender in their religious texts, and that the idea is that they wear the turban because they want to remind themselves that they are individual. They're all royalty. They're all can be treated as well as kings. And so, but it's also a symbol to people from the outside that if you need help, the person wearing the turban will help you because their religion says they have to help you if you need help. I mean, I didn't know that before. You know, we see people in turbans, a lot of us, and go, first of all, that they get misidentified as Muslims, and we are afraid of them. But now I know, if you see somebody with a turban and you need help, they are bound by their religion to help you, which is it flips the whole script.
And then you just released the season 3 finale. It's getting a lot of tweets, a lot of buzz.
Yes.
Yeah. Your purpose in going there was, I think, to dispel some of the myths about Hawaii. So what did you find surprising there?
I mean, I say this, and I hope the Hawaiians we talk to feel okay about this. It's the angriest episode of Hawaii about Hawaii that you'll ever see. Like, it's not like we sort of automatically put Hawaiians in some sort of like, oh, there's this tropical land and they're so friendly and they love when tourists come. And we went to Native Hawaiians and talked about activism and how Hawaii was stolen from them by the U.S. government and how they're basically illegally occupied. But again, they did it with good humor in the same way that I do it. And so there's a conversation at the beginning of the show where I talked to two older people, elder Kanakas, and they were like, we had a whole hour-long conversation where there was laughter, there was tears, there was anger, back to laughter, and you really got to see like a fully formed person in a way that you don't really get to see on TV when people are talking about activism.
I want to say thank you to my guest, W. Kamau Bell, stand-up comedian. The Netflix special is called Private School Negro. He's also host of CNN's United Shades of America. And just a reminder, we're testing a new way to get your voice on the show. We have a new app. It's a very easy way to comment or question anything that we're working on. The recordings make you sound clearer than a phone call, and sending them takes less time than dialing our number and leaving a voicemail. So look for 1A Vox Pop wherever you get your apps, and there's more in the Ask 1A section at the1a.org. Kamau, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Have a great holiday. Joshua is back for the rest of the week. But until we meet again, I'm Celeste Headlee, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.